Good morning.
Good morning.
Hope you're all doing well. If you're not doing well, I hope you feel supported being among all these loving people. Did everyone get a copy of the Fukan Zazengi? Pretty much. Close enough. Very good. So, today, I'm going to talk about the Fukan Zazengi, or the Universal Recommendation for Zazen, written by Ehe Dogen, founder of our Soto Zen sect, our great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandpa, and mostly great, a lot of greats because it's old, but also pretty great because he's pretty great. So this particular text is something he wrote fairly early on in his life, in his teaching life, and it's basically lays out his vision for what Zazen is, what our meditation practice is here. It presents a kind of a broad view of what that might mean. So you may think, oh, this is going to give me some nice practical instructions. And there will be some of those, but there will be some profoundly impractical ones too. It's actually good to have a little bit of both, I think. So this thing is generally chanted at the end of a day during a session, traditionally. So a session is a formal meditation retreat, and we have session six months a year. And we have not been ending the day with chanting this particular text for a while, so I thought, what an opportunity to give you guys a chance. You don't even have to sit for 7 hours of meditation to get a chance to chant this. Pretty cool, right? Although we could take a vote and see if anyone wants to just sit for the next rest of the day. Anyway, so what we're going to do here is chant this thing. So there'll be sections of it that will probably be nigh upon incomprehensible to you. And that's just fine. If you want to have an encounter with early Buddhist literature or the main body of teachings that we carry forward here, you're going to have to get used to there being stuff that's pretty much incomprehensible. There's stuff and it's very confusing. It's a very deep intellectual tradition. So when something comes up that you're just like, what? Just let it go. It's all right. That's just words. But hopefully, if you make the commitment to just say, I'm going to hang out with this text for a few minutes or for a few hours, there will be little pieces of it that will actually resonate or touch your heart. So you can let those just come and go too. But if you find like, I don't really get this, you will probably be together with all of us in that state. So anyway, chanting, of course, is really fun. Yes, it's really fun. You just use your voice with other people. How wonderful. We don't do all that much chanting here at Minnesota Zen Meditation Center. We focus on other types of practice. But chanting for many people, particularly in Japan or all over Asia, the principal practice that they do is chanting. So they don't do any meditation. They just get up in the morning, do their chants, and it's good. It's good. So anyway, if you hate it, I just encourage you to enjoy your hatred. See what that's like. Wow, look at that. Look at this body and mind producing suffering. Wow, amazing. This is one of the best things that happens with our practices. You get to be able to be like, wow, look at this suffering being produced right now. What is that? What an utter mystery this is. But if you just start to think, boy, this is long. Can I breathe this much? Yeah, you can breathe. Just stop and breathe. And come back in and use your voice. It's about listening principally, chanting practice. It's about deep listening. So you can use your voice, but let your voice be coming from a sense of receptivity to the sound you're hearing. I'm sorry this is printed kind of small, so if it's too small to read, then you can just listen. That's good. So anyway, let's just go ahead and do this. This will take, to chant this whole thing, takes a little while. We'll just see what happens. So generally speaking, what we chant here, we'll chant all in octaves. So the men will be universal recommendation, the way is originally perfect and all-pervading, and the women are, the way is originally perfect and all-pervading. It's nice. We're together. La la la. All right, let's do this. Universal recommendation for Zazen. The way is originally perfect and all-pervading. How could it be contingent on practice and realization? The true vehicle is self-sufficient. What need is there for special effort? Indeed, the whole body is free from dust. Who could believe in a means to brush it clean? It is never apart from this very place. What is the use of traveling around to practice? And yet, if there's a hair's breadth deviation, it is like the gap between heaven and earth. If the least like or dislike arises, the mind is lost in confusion. Suppose you are powerful in understanding and enriched in enlightenment, gaining the wisdom that it knows at a glance, clarifying the wisdom, clarifying the mind, arousing an aspiration to reach for the heavens. You are playing in the entranceway, but you are still short of the vital path of emancipation. Consider the Buddha, although he was wise at birth, the traces of his 6 years of upright sitting can yet be seen. As for Bodhidharma, although he had received the mind seal, his 9 years of facing a wall are celebrated still. If he and the ancient sages are like this, how can we today dispense with wholehearted practice? Therefore, put aside the intellectual practice of investigating words and chasing phrases, and learn to take the backward step that turns the light and shines it inward. Your body and mind of themselves will drop away, and your original mace will manifest. If you want to realize such a thing, just work on such right now. For the practice of Zazen, quietly is suitable. Eat and drink moderately. Put aside all involvements and suspend all affairs. Do not think good or bad. Do not judge true or false. Give up the operations of mind, intellect, and consciousness. Stop measuring thoughts, ideas, and views. Have no designs on becoming a Buddha. How could that be limited to sitting or lying down? At your sitting place, spread out a thick mat and place a cushion on it. Sit in either the full or the half lotus position. In the full lotus, place your right foot on your left thigh, then your left foot on your right thigh. In the half lotus, simply place your left foot on your right thigh. Tie your robes loosely and arrange them neatly. And raise your right hand on your left leg and your left hand on your right palm, with thumb tips slightly touching. Straighten your body and sit upright, leaning your heart to right, neither forward nor backward. Align your ears with your shoulders and your nose with your navel. Rest your tip of your tongue against the front of the roof of your mouth, with leaves and lips and lips shut. Always keep your eyes open and breathe softly through your nose. Once you have arranged your posture, take a breath and exhale fully. Rock your body right and left and step into steady, immovable sitting. Think not thinking. Not thinking, what kind of thinking is that? Non-thinking. This is the essential art of Zazen. The Zazen I speak of is not meditation practice. It is simply the Dharma gate of joyful ease, the practice realization of totally culminated enlightenment. It is the goal realized. Traps and snares can never reach it.
If you grasp the point, you are like a dragon gaining new water, like a tiger taking to the mountains. For it means so that the true man appears of itself, so forth from the buried, those in distraction are struck aside. When you rise from sitting, move slowly and quietly, calmly and deliberately. Do not rise suddenly or abruptly. In surveying the past, we find the transcendence of mundane and sacred and dying, is sitting or standing, have all depended entirely on the power of Zazen. In addition, triggering awakening with a finger, a banner, a needle, or a mallet, and effecting realization with a fist, a staff, or a shout. These cannot be understood by discriminative thinking. Thus, they may be known through the practice of supernatural powers. They must represent a conduct beyond seeing and hearing. Are they not a standard prior to knowledge and views? Their seeing to face, intelligence or lack of it is not an issue. Make no distinction between the dull and the sharp-witted. If you concentrate your effort single-mindedly, that in itself is wholeheartedly engaging the way. Practice realization is naturally undefiled. Acting forward is an all and everyday affair. In general, in our world and in others, in both India and China, all equally hold the Buddha's seal. While the lineage expresses its own style, they are all simply devoted to sitting, totally blocked in resolute stability. Although they say there are 1,000 distinctions and 1,000 variations, they all as wholeheartedly engage the way in Zazen. Why leave behind the seat in your own home to wander in vain through the dusty realms of other lands? If you make one misstep, you stumble past what is directly in front of you. You have gained the pivotal opportunity of a human form. You are cast your days and nights in vain. You are taking care of the essential activity of the Buddha way. Who would take wasteful delight in a spark from a flintstone? Besides, the hornet's judgments are like a few on the grass, like a motion of the life, or like a dart of lightning, in an instant, vanished in a flash. Please, honored followers of Zen, long accustomed to groping for the elephant, do not doubt the true dragon. Devote your energies to the way that points and placing the wheel. Reveal the one who has gone beyond learning and is free from effort. Accord with the enlightenment of all the Yandas, succeed to the samadhi of all the ancestors. Continue to lodge in such a way, and you will be such a person. The treasure store will open of itself, and you may enjoy it freely.
Ding! It's 9 o'clock, session's over. Time to go out into the night. So you can actually, I hate to admit it, but you can kind of see why we don't want to chant this at the end of a 16-hour day of meditation. It's a little long, but I find it pretty inspiring. Do not pass your days and nights in vain. You've gained the pivotal opportunity of human form. Wow! How often do we realize, just in our life, wow, I can't believe this is happening. Something is here. Awareness. So I'm going to just kind of hop around this text like a monkey in a tree. Because, you know, you could really, I have heard people give entire Dharma talks on a single sentence from this on numerous occasions, so that's a very worthwhile approach, but it's not the one I'm going to use today. I'm just going to talk about some themes, and they're basically going to be themes just from the first half of this thing. So, first I'll just say, you know, I'm kind of like a rational Westerner by temperament and training, and I spend a lot of time doing secular mindfulness training, and so I have to go in and use early Buddhist teachings, which basically say there's suffering in the world and you can do something about it. And so now I'll give you the tools which are conducive to non-suffering, which is really cool. I love that set of teachings, and they work well. But it's totally not what Dogen starts out with here at all. He says, like, the way is originally perfect and all-pervading. How could it be dependent on practice and realization? The true vehicle is self-sufficient. What is there for special effort? Indeed, the whole body is free from dust. Who can believe in a means to brush it clean? It's never apart from this very place. What is the use of traveling around to practice? So instead of saying, like, yeah, there's suffering, you could do something about it, just like, he's saying, look at the imminence of enlightenment. The way, he starts out with the way, the Tao. We don't really have in the West a concept quite like the Tao. It's just this totally dynamic, unfolding naturalness. He's like, it's always happening. It's always here. The true vehicle. So, you know, this is a Mahayana school. Mahayana Buddhism is the great vehicle. Vehicle that carries everyone to non-suffering. But he's like, this true vehicle is self-sufficient. Wow. I'm so conditioned to constantly be trying to get something to work out that this is profoundly challenging for me. I don't know about you guys. Really, it's like, wow. What's he saying? You can rest here. You can rest here. It reminds me of a story that I read told by a fellow named Louis Perez. Louis Perez is the lyricist and drummer for the band Los Lobos. Louis Perez was addicted to alcohol and drugs. And he still is not. But in the process of stopping using drugs and alcohol, he said it was really hard, but he said, I just did this thing where I put a little note by my alarm clock. So I'd wake up and I'd push my alarm and I'd see this note. And it said, Dear Louis, I'm not going to need your help running things. Love, God. Now, I managed to use the word God at this Zen center without anyone leaving yet. So some people think, oh, God, that's cool. Yeah, some people think, oh, what is that? It's just for you. You can have your own understanding of what that word means. But in this case, what I'll say is there's a commonality with what Louis Perez used to encourage himself at that time, was just to be like, it's okay. There is an okayness to this whole thing. His addiction, he realized his addiction was about constantly trying to control and manipulate reality. I don't feel good, so I'll take a drug and then it will seem different. And this is actually, this idea of addiction is basically, this is how Buddhism understands human psychology. We're constantly addicted to trying to objectify and control apparently external phenomena to try and secure our happiness. And it doesn't work that well. If you look at the course of human history, there have been some successes, but you just turn on the news and you go, it's not working out the way we want it to. So one antidote to this tendency is to just realize the imminence of some kind of inherent goodness that's here. And of course you might go, well, if God doesn't need my help, why do I do anything? I will say that what Louis Perez did while he was getting that encouragement for himself from this note that he gave to himself was that he got sober and changed his life, so he was much happier, and he wrote one of probably what most people agree is the greatest Los Lobos record. Was, you know, a great album by one of the greatest artists in 20th century America. Not bad for just like letting things happen. (Clears throat) So Doggett moves on, and there's this passage that says, suppose you are powerful in understanding, rich in enlightenment, gaining the wisdom that knows at a glance, clarifying the mind and attaining a way, arousing the aspiration to reach for the heavens. You are playing in the entranceway. You are still short of the vital path of emancipation. So he starts out, this is all right here. You don't have to do anything. And then he says, so we've got something you really got it going on. You're just playing in the entranceway. So this is characteristic of Zen discourse, and Dogen in particular. What some people will, what I think I hear Rosemary often say, it's pulling the rug out from under. We want to land. We want to land. But if we land and we go, oh yeah, everything's already perfect. Not sure that's quite true. So this this little passage about like clarifying the mind, I guess, I'm not sure. You guys may be like, yeah, I don't really feel like I've attained the way and I'm clarifying the mind. So we could take this as a warning to people who get kind of attached to the realizations they have from practice, which could happen to some people in this room or some people sitting on this platform. There's a wonderful koan. One day, Magu... Oh, I should say, before I say this koan, that that there's this whole body of literature that is almost never discussed here. But if you look at early Buddhist teachings, if you look at Mahayana teachings, if you look at Taoism, if you look at yogic texts, all of them say that if you really practice for a long time, you'll get some serious, what we would now call supernatural powers. Seeing through walls, walking through walls, flying. My favorite is flying on clouds. That's the Taoist style. I mean, I think flying just like Superman is cool, but on a cloud. So anyway, you're flying on clouds, seeing into the future, reading people's minds. Wow. So I haven't experienced any of these things, personally. But the literature is there. There's a bunch of literature about it. What's going on? Anyway, so one day, Magu, this is like in the 8th century, I think, maybe 9th century in China. One day, Magu, Nanquan, and another monk were on pilgrimage. They met an old woman with a tea hut. The old woman said, made a pot of tea and brought three cups, and she said, oh, monks, let those of you... By the way, Nanquan is like one of the greatest figures in Chinese history, a towering titan of Zen. Wow, Buddhist icon. She says, she brought, made a pot of tea and brought three cups. She said, oh, monks, let those of you with miraculous powers drink tea. The three monks looked at each other. The woman said, watch as this decrepit old woman shows her miraculous powers. She poured three cups of tea and went out. This is the kind of miracle that Dogen is interested in. The miracle of drinking a cup of tea. Imminence. But we have this little theme of humility, these big, fancy Zen masters. She's like, oh, look, are you forgetting? Everyone can just pour tea. But you may still think, well, yeah, but who around here is Nanquan? Well, let me ask you this. It says in here, gaining the wisdom that knows at a glance. How many people in this room have looked at a news headline and immediately known who was wrong and who was right? How many of you have encountered one of your family members or your spouse and seen the look on their face and the attitude of their body and went, oh, here we go? We think we know very fast. What do we know? What do we know? So anyway, he starts this talk talking about the imminence of the way, the here-ness, the all-readiness. But supposedly, according to the old story, Dogen, he was raised Buddhist, and he was very intellectually gifted. And the teachings he was receiving were these. There's a lot of teachings about how this is already realization. You know, there'd be teachers being like, you don't have to practice because it's already realization. And then, but he was like, but if that's true, why am I unhappy? Why am I troubled? Why am I confused? And this was basically his question that drove him to a life of practice. So the question, if everything is already just flowing in its total natural way, why do I have to choose to do anything? Why does it matter? So one thing to remember is once you've actually confused yourself if you say everything's already imminently perfect and I don't have to do anything, you've actually removed yourself from the equation because you think you're a thing that's separate from everything's perfection. So you cannot not be active. It's not possible. Even after we are all dead and rotting in the grave, physically, we'll be active in that sense, and whatever we put into the world will still be unfolding beyond any ideas we have about it. So you can't escape activity. You can't really do the thing where you're like, well, apparently there's a lot of racism in our country, but I'm not doing it. You're still part of that deal. You can't escape all these vast situations of human joy and suffering that you're already inherently a part of. The activity is happening. So here we are. What are we doing? So Dogen says, he goes on to say, he talks about Buddha. Buddha was already super wise. You know, he just was born with a lot of understanding, but he still practiced and practiced for years. Bodhidharma came from India, one of the great icons of Buddhism. He was an acknowledged master, and what did he do? He said, I'm just going to sit in this cave for 9 years and meditate. This is how can we today, Dogen says, how can we today dispense with wholehearted practice? So at the beginning he says, practice doesn't make enlightenment happen. The way is originally perfect, all pervading. How could it be dependent on practice realization? You're not going to make it happen. It's already happening. But you can kind of like just get in the flow. I think one way you could say it is practice doesn't make a realization or enlightenment happen. It's just that realization is practice. So, and this, I can assume that this is kind of puzzling to the cognitive mind, but that's okay. It's good to be puzzled. We got it figured out way too much. We got it figured out way too much. Everyone's got it figured out, and then they figure it out on top of someone else. Someone else had it figured out a different way. Trouble. Trouble, trouble. So anyway, in the Song of the Jewel Mirror Samadhi, Dongshan says, you are not it. You're not enlightenment. But in truth, it is you. Dogen says, to carry the self forward and experience the myriad things is delusion. That the myriad things come forth and experience themselves is realization. It's just kind of getting out of the way. Getting out of the way. I heard a talk by Norman Fisher recently where he was talking about this conundrum, and he says, "Well, if enlightenment is already here, then why? And Buddhas are they realize enlightenment? Why would they practice?" And he's like, "Because that's what they do. That's the activity. That's what Buddhahood is the activity of practice. Sitting down again and again and just doing this weird. Why am I here?" Why am I here? So Dogen moves on. He says, turn around the light to shine within. No, he doesn't. That's someone else who says a very similar thing. What do you say? Shine within. I wrote a note, shine within. He says, put aside the intellectual practice of investigating words and chasing phrases and learn to take the backward step that turns the light and shines it inward. Put aside the intellectual practice of investigating words and chasing phrases and learn to take the backward step that turns the light and shines it inward. So the most obvious thing that happens here is you go, this Dharma talk is already really confusing. And what that guy up there is doing is he's engaging in the intellectual practice of investigating words and chasing phrases. So I'm just going to turn around the light and shine it inward. Well, that's good. You're involved in the intellectual practice of investigating words and chasing phrases too at that point, right? What have we done? So on the one hand, we could say that this is just an invitation to put aside everything else and do the practice of Zazen. Set aside all the words and have a look at what's inside. But on the other hand, the truth is, according to Mahayana teachings, basically human life is an activity, unless we pay attention, of just investigating words and chasing phrases. What you see when you do this practice, you go, oh, I'm going to observe my breathing. And then you listen to a long story. And then you briefly interrupt it to like, wow, I have a body. Cool. There's a wall here. What you realize is that your mind is constantly investigating words and chasing phrases. Most of our life is not an engagement with anything external. It's just engagement with this story we're telling ourselves about how the world is. So how do you turn around the light and shine it inward? How do you take the backward step that turns around the light? Well, the first thing that we do is we have this realization that's like, holy moly, I think a lot. And then you just keep having that realization for the rest of your life. That's what I'm doing. It's awesome. Just realizing that your mind is constantly jumping into this chasing around of thoughts and ideas, this little internal narrative. That's one element of this turning around the light to shine within. But it's also seeing all these elements of our lives that we normally ignore, because if we're not absorbed in this little intellectual thing, we're kind of like looking at apparently external forms. We're noticing like, I have feelings. The reason that form sucks is because I've decided it sucks. So to turn around the light to shine within is to be in touch with how we feel. To take care of the feelings and the thoughts and the other parts of our immediate experience that are totally ignored, the body. If we do that, we can return to the sensory field, to the visual field, to sound, and they'll be more open. And we won't be constantly just chasing around these little words and phrases. So then, Dogen gives us some hot tips on practicing Zazen. 10 cool tricks for practicing Zazen. Click on the link. Ooh, let me write that down. I wonder what the pictures would be. Anyway, he says, for the practice of Zazen, a quiet place is suitable. Eat and drink moderately. Pretty practical. Put aside all involvements and suspend all affairs. Can you do it? Can you just sit down for 20 minutes and say, I'm putting it down? It's hard to do. You say, well, I want to do it and I don't. That's okay. At least receive the encouragement that can put down the burden of all these involvements and affairs that you're carrying and carrying and carrying. We have this nice place here, people, to do this. We have this sanctuary. It's in nature. We're very fortunate. Come here. Do the practice here where it's easy. I teach this practice. I like teaching this practice in halfway house. It's like the people are crammed in the room. It's kind of smelly. Everyone's kind of cranky with each other because they're crammed in little two-bedroom rooms. And then it's like I'm teaching this kind of practice in a police department during roll call, which is while they're on shift. So we're sitting here, and I'm like, just observe your breathing and your body. And there's a radio going, the suspect is now moving across the backyard through 37th Avenue. That's hard. You think this is hard. So, yeah, put aside all involvement. Suspend all affairs. Just give up the operations of mind, intellect, and consciousness. Stop measuring things with thoughts, ideas, and views. Have no designs on becoming a Buddha. So don't do this to become a Buddha. You don't have to figure anything out. So this is just an invitation to put a lot of stuff down, carrying around. I understand that you've already received the invitation 400 times and you still sit down and still see all these thoughts come up. I'm like that too. That's okay. But it's just a reminder. How often do we need a reminder? You're safe. You're safe without all that thinking. Letting go. So then he does this body thing. The body thing. This, I will confess, used to really irk me because I get done with the session and I've been sitting zazen like 12 periods. And then at the end of the day, he goes through the posture I've been holding the whole time. Why am I doing that? So that was good. I could be like, ooh, aversion. I want to be done with this kind of instruction and move on to something more important or fancy. Oh, wasting my life. But let's do this. So this thing starts with this instruction about half and full lotus. So that's not going to be available to many of you. So just establish a lower body posture that's conducive to meditation. And I'm just going to go through the instructions out loud again. And you'll be like, well, I think I already know this. That's all right. Repetition. I don't know how many times I've practiced an F Lydian mode scale on my guitar. Thousands. Still helps. The body. At your sitting place, spread out a thick mat and place a cushion on it. Sit in either the full or the half lotus position. In the full lotus, place your right foot on your left thigh, then your left foot on the right thigh. In the half lotus, simply place the left foot on the right thigh. Tie your robes loosely and arrange them neatly. Place your right hand on the left leg and your left hand in the right palm, with thumb tips lightly touching. Straighten your body and sit upright, leaning neither forward nor backward, neither right nor left. Align the ears with the shoulders and the nose with the navel. Place the tip of the tongue against the front of the roof of the mouth, with lips and teeth together, both shut. Always keep your eyes open and breathe softly through your nose. Once you have arranged your posture, take a breath and exhale fully. Rock your body right and left and settle into steady, immovable sitting. right. Well, thank you. You can just move around however your body asks. So this emphasis on body is valuable. I was digging around in what's generally considered to be the most authoritative text on yoga practice that there is, the Yoga Sutra of Patanjali. So this is from about the 5th century in India. For those of you who like to keep track of this thing, it's probably a contemporary of Vasubandhu, Yogacara master. And, so we all, yoga, you know, lots of bending, stretching. But actually, there's only two sutras that directly mention asana, or posture, in the Yoga Sutras, which is a couple hundred little aphorisms. And these are they. So this is what the Yoga Sutra has to say about posture. In total, posture should be steady and comfortable, attained by the relaxation of effort and absorption in the infinite. From this, one is not afflicted by the dualities of opposites. That sounds a lot like Zazen. You can spend a lot of time parsing the intellectual differences between these traditions, but boy, there's some commonalities in here, aren't they? So, intimacy with the body. So valuable. This is with you all the time. Why not give it some loving attention? Also, it's driving you around, and we don't know it. All these processes in the body, emotional processes unfolding that govern the way we think, the way we feel. It's good to know. Good to know what's happening. We think it's all out there. That person is bad, hence I should judge them. But actually, the reaction is here. This is a practice of shedding reactivity. So then becomes the most famous part of this text, I think, for a lot of people. So Zazen says, once he goes through the postural instruction, the next thing he says is, rock your body right and left, settle into steady, immovable sitting, think, not thinking. Not thinking? What kind of thinking is that? Non-thinking. This is the essential art of Zazen. Now, this has caused many people I know to throw up their hands or to mock our beloved Dogen. But he's given us a lot of instruction. People say, all he says is think, not thinking. What's that mean? He actually says a lot of things. He says, sit with your hands in a mudra. Sit upright. Align your ears with your shoulders. Let go of the operation of mind, intellect, and consciousness. The way is already here. He says a lot of stuff. But at the same time, this phrase, this is the essential activity of Zazen, does make it seem kind of like a point that he's trying to make. So, all I can say is, this sure sounds like a koan, and it is a direct quotation from a previous koan. When priest Yaoshan was sitting in meditation, a monk asked, what do you think about sitting in steadfast composure? Yaoshan said, I think not thinking. The monk said, how do you think not thinking? Yaoshan said, non-thinking. And in case you think this is just a whole situation with translation, the two different things that we translate as non and not, according to most people who understand Chinese and Japanese, are like, they're pretty much identical. So it's a koan. And people, for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, you can just let this float by. But generally we think of Soto Zen as not being a koan practice and Rinzai as being koan focused. But at this point, Dogen basically says Zazen is inherently a koan. What is it to think not thinking? Anyway, he moves on. So what do we notice? What I notice here is this looks a non-dual. So non-dualism is so central to Mahayana thought, that all the dualities that we make are not ultimately true. Anything that you think is a separate thing from other things isn't. It's just, that's just an idea that you have. We dwell in this world constructed by the dualistic tendency of our consciousness, and it causes us to suffer. And if we can see through that duality, there's something profoundly peaceful already here. What does he say? He says, this is not meditation practice. Zazen is not meditation practice, everybody. You don't have to practice because you're already there. Just sit down. Just to practice is complete. Zazen is not meditation practice. He says, it is the practice, realization of totally culminated enlightenment. So what do Buddhas do? They sit Zazen. That's what Buddha is. It's just sitting Zazen. It's a very religious kind of language he's employing. He wants to blow up all our little ideas. Well, maybe if I sit Zazen a little bit more, then I'll just be slightly less mean to my mom. That's cool. I don't want to be mean to my mom. I'm tired of it. But on the other hand, he's like, how big? This is bigger than that. This isn't about some little instrumental trick to kind of slightly improve things. It's jumping directly into the way of the total natural unfolding of everything as it is. You don't have to figure it out. In fact, you can't. But your figuring it out can't be separate from it. So that's okay. Just keep sitting down. The practice realization of totally culminated enlightenment. It is the koan realized. Traps and snares can never reach it. If you grasp the point, you are like a dragon gaining the water, like a tiger taking to the mountain. Sounds cool, right? You're in your element. You're in your element. This is what Tim always talks about, Shunryu Suzuki, who inspired him so much, is he just was always in his element. He go into weird situations, like try and ride a horse. What did he tell Tim? He said, I went to this place and they were horseback riding. Tim said, I didn't know you could ride a horse. He said, yeah, but the horse knew how to go. I said, Flo, it's okay. Towards the end here, though, pretty good. The Dharma Gate of Joyful Ease and Repose. Dharma Gate of Joyful Ease and Repose. So, sometimes Zazen is hard. Now, sometimes this practice is hard. You're like, I don't actually want to be compassionate right now. I would like to remain suffering. And continue to feel separate from you. That's very common. Fundamental aspect of human consciousness. And we don't want to, I don't want to sit. How many people here? How long has it been since you said, I don't really want to sit? It hasn't been that long for me. But I just keep doing it because I have some encouragement. But the thing is, it can be hard, but this is really dumb that we emphasize this. I mean, we do it to encourage you, so because people come and they go, oh, it's kind of hard to sit. I guess I can't do it. It's like, no, no, no. That's cool. That's the way unfolding. You're all right. But it doesn't have to be hard. So I certainly hope it's not always hard. And Dogen's here like, this is just the Dharma Gate of joyful ease and repose. A Dharma Gate means the kind of practice you choose. So you can do the practice of, you know, cooking food for the community. You can do the practice of gardening. Or you can do Zazen, which is the joyful ease and repose practice. Just let it go. Just come in and let it go. It's good for the world. It's good for you. I'm going to read you a little poem by Xingang, who's one of my favorite teachers. She's a 16th century Chinese nun. And I'm going to read a little excerpt from one of her poems to end. The first month of summer retreat, written in leisure. In the gates and halls of the elders, the work of the lineage flourishes. Oh, I should say this. She's going to refer here to something that's a little weird. Blows and shouts. So she's a Rinzai teacher, which means they spend a lot of time yelling at each other and hitting each other to get each other to wake up. So don't worry. I'm not going to try this. Anyway, the first month of summer retreat, written in leisure. In the gates and halls of the elders, the work of our lineage flourishes. Knowing my own lazy ignorance, I've hidden away in order to be still. Esoteric methods, blows and shouts, I've given them all a rest. The myriad phenomena merge in emptiness. Stop asking about Zen. A worn, patched robe hangs lopsided from my shoulders. When hunger comes, I will eat. When tired, I will sleep. Sitting on my cushion, I will completely forget the world and just let the days and the months drift by my window. Resting high in the cloudy peaks, a lodging for this illusory body. White clouds and green bamboo, one leaning against the other. Before my eyes, this magical scene undergoes its transformations. Fastening shut my brushwood gate, my happiness spills over. Well, thank you all for your practice of being. Does anyone have any questions or observations?
Yeah. There was a couple of lines that sounded very familiar from something else. Turn around the light to shine within. What's that from?
Well, it's not actually a direct quotation, so it's slightly different in this, but that's from the Song of the Grass for Hermitage.
And the other one was, do not pass your days and nights in vain.
From the Harmony of Difference and Sameness, interestingly, both written by Shoto Shichen, which some of you may know as an old buddy of mine.
Is there other stuff that he
Yeah, it's laden with quotations. And this is, the thing is, we have this idea that we have intellectual property. This is just a foreign concept. So, you know, it's not like you have to put a footnote in this text to him because he's like, I'm just saying words. Mm-hmm. What's my words? What a ridiculous idea. How can they be mine? So yeah, there's a lot of quotations in there.
First of all, who was that again that you just read?
That was Shingang from this wonderful book I recommend to all beings, Daughters of Emptiness, a collection of poems by Chinese Buddhist nuns.
In the Busho's Nagarjuna class, we've been told to chant Bukanzo Zangi every day this week.
That's a total coincidence. Except for that Busho and I have one mind.
Three of you helped us.
That's really weird. Okay, whatever.
You know, the physical instruction for Zazen, do you think that has something to do with the fact that they were sitting that way anyway? Mm. Because, you know, I've run across people that say, let's see, if you don't sit in a half lotus or a full lotus, you're not doing Zazen. Have you run across that?
Yeah. I read about one thing where this place in China where you'd come in for the intro and they'd be like, well, if you can sit full lotus, you're in a golden pagoda. And if you sit half lotus, you're in a silver pagoda. And if you're sitting kneeling, you're in a mud pagoda. And they didn't even have chairs. So people have a lot of ways to do this, but that's not the way I'm doing it. But, you know, the thing is, the posture is powerful. You know, yoga, the awareness of the transformative qualities of certain bodily positions is valuable. So, you know, if you're sitting in a chair, I don't recommend your easy Lazy Boy, unless, you know, you have an injury. I had a friend who had a really bad injury, so she did her meditation in the Lazy Boy. Otherwise, my body. You got something to say?
One thing that becomes obvious is that the very ancient people reached for the posture by experimentation. What works best for clearing my mind and emptying delusion? And with yoga, in fact, they found through apparently experimentation this is what worked best. I remember I wanted to know where can I inexpensively buy a zafu. Well, it was kind of interesting to remember that India, before Buddhism, back in the Bhagavad Gita, it was recommended, and these were the people that lived in the forests around the in India, that they would actually make a pile of grass. Before the zafu existed, they would make a little pile of grass somewhere in the woods and meditate on that.
I still do that.
Wow.
I recommend it. Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, this week. The zafu is a wonderful convenience, but meditation was around before the zafu.
Yeah.
They make a... And I suppose that of the distractions we're dealing with, the very ancients in the time of the Upanishads, they had to say, I need to maintain mental clarity while there is a bug climbing up my leg, because I'm in the woods after all.
I do that too. I recommend it. So yeah, I recommend going outside too.
And
really do.
When you realize a bug might crawl up your leg at some point.
Yeah.
And realize that thousands of years ago, that's how you meditated.
Yeah.
By the way, a name of one of many characters that has fascinated me, in the story of the old lady with the three cups of tea,
mm-hmm.
I bet in my thoughts mispronouncing his name is Nan Chuan.
It's just different transliterations, so I don't know Chinese.
Oh, neither do I.
Yeah.
But wanting to find more on the guy, Chuan was his last name?
Yeah. It's out there. You got to dig.
Okay. I've got his name in other books. I'm just hearing you say it, I didn't know if it was spelled the same.
He's good at Zen. So this is good. Yeah. So going outside is really good, actually, to do this. But this place is a refuge. This is a refuge. I think we got to move to questions and answers here, because otherwise I'm going to get in trouble for going over. Okay, one brief thing. Yes. Walking meditation, what I'd say is when you're walking, the easiest way to do it is to match your breath with your pace. So if we're doing kinhin in here, you inhale as you raise the heel and exhale as you put the foot down. And if you're walking outside, you can walk faster and maybe inhale as you take three steps and exhale as you take three or something like that. Something like that. That's my brief instruction. But I have to move forward lest I break the laws of Minnesota Zen meditation schedule, and God knows what might happen. So, thank you all.